You're listening to the Spark Radio Network, internet radio like you've never heard before. Innovation, creativity, and imagination are all said to begin with a spark. So fasten your seatbelt and take the ride of your life and listen for the spark.
You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Most writers and radio show hosts know that to connect with your fans, you need to do more than just write books or record the latest podcasts. There are many different elements that go into forming an online platform, but there are also many hidden traps. To make matters worse, solid advice on how to survive the muddy waters is scarce. In the book Hidden Traps, I talk about some of the important issues of working with an online platform, highlighting traps that could put your physical or internet security at risk, or be harmful to your reputation. Are your social media posts just links with a few disjointed words making you look like someone who can't complete a sentence? Did your new website cost you more than you anticipated? Are you leaking your personal contact details across the web without even knowing it? Then you need Hidden Traps. Hidden Traps is now available in paperback and ebook from a variety of retailers, including Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Kobo. Visit blackwolfpublications.com for more details.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-553-8687. That's 800-553-8687. Again, 800-553-8687.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now. 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
Sometimes riders feel lost, unsure why a passage may not be working. It takes another set of eyes to help us nurture our writing into full maturity. At Black Wolf Editorial Services, we strive to enable writers to develop and grow, offering manuscript critiques and line edits through a mentoring editorial style. We also offer assistance on generating a writer's bio for your websites. Black Wolf Editorial Services, nurturing your writing into maturity. For a full list of services, visit blackwolfeditorial.com.
Country called the USA, and we fly our flag cause we're proud and free, we're Americans. Red, white, and blue is our way of life. Never back down from a challenge or a fight. Nature provides, God gives the rights, we're Americans. We fish the waters and we hunt the lands. We forge the steel with our own two hands. With what we've got, we do the best we can, we're Americans.
This is Rio of Madison Rising, and you're listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
It's time now for the Conservative Curmudgeon Radio Show. Now, here's Grouchy.
Good evening, everybody. So glad you could be with us tonight. We're going to get this program rolling right off the bat. Before we do, though, I want to give you a quick programming reminder that Jesse's POV follows me. Then the nightcap tonight later on with Rowdy Rick Robinson on America Off the Rails. Rick, I forget if that time slot has been filled in between there or not yet, but if it hasn't, they're used to it. If it is, I don't know what it is.
It is still a work in progress. We actually have a show coming over there, but they haven't started yet, so.
Gotcha. Okay, so it's all good. So we gave Seymour the night off. No breaking glass tonight. We're going to get right into it with our guest. Dean Clancy is joining us tonight to talk about the CREATES Act. And without any further hesitation, let's go ahead and bring Dean on right now. Thank you for joining us, Dean.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
So before we get rolling into the CREATES Act, I do know a little bit about your background. You were in the White House and in Congress as a senior policy official. Can you fill us in a little bit as to whose administration and in Congress who you were working with there?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've done policy work in Washington for more than 20 years. I was in the Bush administration at the Office of Management and Budget. I was sort of the policy person in charge of the day-to-day management of government policy and messaging in the areas of health care, education, welfare, labor, pensions, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, programs like that. Before that, I was on Capitol Hill, and I've also been worked in the private sector, and these days I'm a consultant on policy questions.
And for folks not possibly not familiar with Dean's work, Dean was also with FreedomWorks for a while as well. Is that correct? VP,
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, I was the vice president of public policy for FreedomWorks for several years and did a lot of grassroots advocacy, especially during that period of the, you know, when the Tea Party was at its height. And I led the efforts to repeal Obamacare at FreedomWorks and got to meet lots of wonderful grassroots conservatives and libertarians. And it was just a wonderful experience.
Fantastic. Well, we are so glad you could join us tonight. We are going to talk CREATES Act, which deals with, well, I'll let you tell us. This is your baby. You actually wrote a great piece for The Hill on it. Tell us all about it, Dean.
Sure. The CREATES Act is about one thing, and that's lower drug prices. Everybody wants lower drug prices. Unfortunately, a lot of liberal Democrats and unfortunately too many Republicans think that the way that you get there is with price controls. And we know from 40 centuries of human experience that price controls don't work. In fact, they often have the opposite of the intended consequence. That's not the right way to lower drug prices. What the CREATES Act does is try to take a market-oriented approach to solve a particular problem that has been keeping drug prices higher than they should be. And it's an outgrowth of two things, our patent system and our food, drug, and safety system. And the interconnection of those has led to a problem where basically expensive pharmaceutical medicines that are life-saving and healing are staying on patent effectively too long, beyond the 20 years that's normally given to a patented medicine. And it's a result of behavior by the research-based pharmaceutical companies, the big pharma companies. Basically, they try to keep those monopolies going. That's what a patent is, of course. It's a government-granted monopoly, but it's supposed to be temporary. What the CREATES Act does is try to intervene there to make sure that those patents are not prolonged. And what it's trying to do is help the generic manufacturers. Those are the would-be competitors who don't originate the drug, but then they produce the drug in their, you know, they make a copy of it, if you will. And that's right. Where you get the competition after the patent expires. But they've had a problem. They have not been able to come to market quickly after the 20-year patent expires because of gaming that goes on by those patent-holding pharma companies. And what it really boils down to is this. The FDA says when you come out with a generic version of a drug, it has to meet two criteria. One, it's got to be chemically identical to the original drug. And two, it has to be shown to be just as safe. And that requires testing and, you know, making sure, and a lot of hoops and hurdles and paperwork, which the generic companies are happy to do, but it often requires that they have large numbers of samples of the original drug, and that's where the gaming comes in. The big pharma companies hold back the samples. They won't sell to the would-be competitors, and they even tell the wholesalers and retailers, specialty pharmacies who normally distribute their drug, if you sell this to a generics company that wants to produce this drug, we'll cut you off. We won't do business with you. And because of this gaming, they've effectively prolonged their monopoly, and that's kept drug prices high. So, I put a lot out there for you to chew on, but that's the idea of the CREATES Act, is to cut through that and get the drug samples to the would-be competitor so they can do the testing that's required by the FDA and get a competitor drug to the market as quickly as possible.
Okay. So let me play devil's advocate for a second here. From the capitalism standpoint of it, the 20-year patent is supposed to be the window in which the big pharma company recoups all its R&D costs and makes the profit that they're going to adequately cover themselves with. Is that correct?
Yep, that's exactly right. I mean, there's no guarantee that they will recoup their R&D costs, but that's the idea of the patent, is that it enables them to do that. And the trade-off is by getting that monopoly, they agree to publish their secrets. They let the world know how they came up with this innovative therapy. And then, of course, that is going to mean competition in the future after the patent expires.
Right. Assuming the drug is successful and does what it needs to do and yada, yada, yada. Yeah. So now you mentioned the testing that the generic companies have to do. Do they also have to go through the process of proving efficacy, or is there some workaround for them that they don't have to pitch in the same kind of research dollars that these big pharma companies do?
No, the generic companies are not in the business of researching innovative therapies. That's what the main pharma companies do. The generics do, as it were, ride along on the innovation, but they do provide a valuable service in that they bring competition to the system. So you're right. They don't have to invest in the basic research and trials and so on that initially are expended by the innovator to produce the drug.
Right, and in turn, that you know, they get their 20-year patent for doing that research in, you know, in covering their expenses.
Right.
They'll be the exclusive dealer of that particular drug at that time.
Right. And it's
okay.
A great system.
So I'm
it encourages innovation and accelerates progress.
Yeah, and now, let's see here. The patent law in the CREATES Act is not affected at all. So the patent will stay 20 years, is that right?
Yes, that's right. The CREATES Act doesn't touch your property in your patent. It simply says when the time comes that your patent expires, you have to cooperate with those who would purchase samples of your drug at a market price, by the way. It's not like you get free samples. You've got to pay for it, but you can't just hold back, because if you hold back, you're in effect trying to remain the exclusive distributor of your product, and the patent system does not give you a perpetual property. It gives you a 20-year monopoly, and after that, competition is supposed to come in. And because these generics are being asked to meet safety standards, and they can only do it with samples of the actual original drug, that's when you need to make sure that the patent holders actually cooperate with that. And the CREATES Act tries to deal with that in a very narrow way. And as you said, it doesn't touch their patent property. It just tries to basically set a timetable. 30 days after the request, the drug should be, you know, delivered and at a market price. And if there's a problem, if there's a holdup, then and only then the generic company would have a new right to go into court and basically ask a judge to compel the pharma company to cooperate.
Well, I mean, you know, that doesn't sound like a bad deal, especially if the end result is lower price for consumers. We know, I'm looking at your article from The Hill right now, and I've got some highlights here. I don't see where it specifically outlines the amount of money spent annually on pharmaceuticals by Americans, but I do have that on another chart from the federal government. I'm sure it's a number you're familiar with, but $360 billion last year.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, Americans spend a lot of money on drugs.
So do we have any kind of estimate as to what this might in the long term help as far as savings, or is it just something we're trying to do to help knock costs down in general? Or
yeah, no, I don't think we have a specific dollar estimate of the savings. We just know that in principle there will be savings, because, you know, for every month that a patented drug has no competition, prices can remain high. So for every month that there is competition, prices will have to come down because of competition. That's how the market works. And so from that, we know there will be savings. Will it be, you know, fantabulous savings? We can't be sure. Depends on how many drugs are coming off patent at a given moment and how many people are using those drugs and how expensive those drugs are. And, of course, you know, there are some very expensive drugs out there, innovative therapies that can cost thousands, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. That's probably where you see your biggest savings. Most drugs are not quite so expensive, so you won't see as much savings. But in general, you'll definitely see savings.
Well, and that's things that middle America can definitely sink their wallet into. I'm sure. I know my household could. I guess probably the biggest example that we've seen in recent times of what can happen with exclusivity of drugs would be the EpiPens with Shkreli.
Right.
I mean, the way they jacked the price up on the EpiPens and left these people in the lurch with no real alternative.
Yeah, that's actually a perfect example. He did it with an AIDS drug called Daraprim as well. Shkreli's basic model was to take a drug, and here it's slightly different from what we're talking about, but the principle is the same. He'd take a drug that was already off patent, but for which no competition had arisen for some reason. So he was in a position to kind of make it a monopoly, and then what he would do is remove all the other distributors of that drug. So he was the only one actually distributing it. So he'd cut out middlemen, basically. Then he'd jack the price up to what he thought the market would bear. And in the case of Daraprim, that was going from $13.50 a pill to $750 a pill.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what the CRAZE Act is trying to do is fight that kind of thing by at least encouraging those who want to compete to do so.
Sure. Sure. And now the remedy for these generic pharma companies that want to jump in the game, like you were mentioning, they petitioned to buy the samples from the originating company, and they would, under the CRAZE Act, which I also read was not included in the omnibus bill.
That's so right. The support for the CRAZE Act is actually quite broad, and there have been attempts to include it not just in this most recent omnibus appropriation, but actually in the one previous to that late last year. And in both cases, the same thing happened. There was talk about the CRAZE Act going into the bill and going to President Trump and being signed into law. But then there were objections from members, and I'm pretty sure that those members were hearing arguments from the big pharmaceutical companies about why this wasn't such a good idea, and so it got dropped from the bill.
So we're back to the power of the dollar in Washington, D.C. again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's always the case. But I think this particular bill has a good future because it has broad support, as I mentioned. It's got a very interesting list of co-sponsors. It includes people on the right like Mike Lee, Rand Paul, and Ted Cruz. And it's got people on the left like Dianne Feinstein, Dick Durbin, Patrick Leahy, Susan Collins, and a lot of people in between. I actually think that the only source of opposition appears to be from the pharmaceutical companies who stand to have their profits diminished.
And it's amazing that they have the power to stop this from happening.
Indeed. It's a sad thing about how our system works. But I think if the leadership in the House and Senate were simply to allow the CRAZE Act to have an up or down vote on the floor, I think it would pass. I think the arguments against it are not strong enough, but they haven't done that. Instead, there's been talk about whether to attach it to a big must-pass bill, and they've decided not to. I really think that consumers ought to try to persuade their members of Congress to, just bring it up for a vote. Let people debate it and decide.
Oh, I tend to agree. I like to... I'm just one of those people, I like to have a vote on everything, whether it's our representatives or the people. And I know that in a bill like this, that would be our representatives doing that. But there are definitely naysayers to this bill out there.
Sure.
They're talking about that this is basically just a revolving door to litigation that's going to do nothing but serve to line the pockets of trial lawyers.
Yeah, that's their big argument. I don't put much stake in that. I'm no friend of the trial lawyers. They certainly have their flaws, but they're not really involved here very much because the bill is so narrowly crafted. It says 30 days after the request, you can walk into court and ask a judge to basically enjoin the pharma company to deliver. And sometimes what's going to happen there is you're going to have a stalled negotiation, and the judge is going to try to bring the parties together. I don't think you're going to see big damages awards or out of control juries or whatever, you know, that sort of negative scenario that you sometimes get in civil litigation. This is going to be more like a judge acting as a referee to try to bring these parties together. There, of course, is the potential for some damages, you know, if one of the parties is behaving, you know, in bad faith and abusing
right.
the judicial system. But I do think that the argument that this we shouldn't do this just because it might help trial lawyers is a pretty weak argument.
Well, yeah, especially considering what the other side of the coin is, and that's helping the American people.
Exactly.
So, Dean, let me ask you, how does the REMS program figure into the CREATES Act and these pharmaceutical companies maybe using it to try to protect their intellectual property, per se?
Sure. REMS is an acronym that stands for Risk Evaluation Mitigation System. And the FDA imposes REMS requirements only for those drugs that have to be handled with special care, drugs that are particularly toxic or for which they're concerned about possible adverse outcomes. And the REMS will go into effect, you know, even early on while they're testing the drug, but then when they actually start producing and distributing it, they'll have to meet certain extra requirements. For example, the people who dispense the drug may have to undergo special training about the potential adverse effects. They may have to keep the drug in certain kinds of facilities or certain kinds of containers, and they might have to actually report to the FDA the names of the people who have received the drug so those people can be contacted if a new unexpected adverse outcome is discovered. So it's an extra measure of safety for drugs that are particularly, you know, that need to be handled with care. And that's called REMS. And how does it affect what we're talking about? Well, apparently some of these originator companies will seize on the fact that their drug does have REMS requirements and will again not necessarily cooperate with the would-be generic, or will raise questions about the ability of that company to live up to these high standards. And basically the two companies have to cooperate. You don't want to have, you know, two different implementations of REMS going on, one of a higher quality than another. Everybody's got to live by one set of rules for safety reasons. And so apparently problems do arise. And this would be another area of negotiation between these companies and another area where potentially a judge would have to get involved to make sure that everybody's on the same page.
Great. I mean, that lays it out pretty good. Like you said, it's narrowly focused. I like that. I like that they still have the opportunity to recoup their investment in developing the drugs on the big pharma side. I do like the idea of competition, though, after the patent expires. I don't know. I have a hard time seeing a downside to this, really.
Yeah, as I said in my article, I think this is pretty much a policy no-brainer, and I hope Congress will vote on it and pass it as soon as possible.
I was going to say, now, are we looking at possibly having this go through as a standalone bill now that the omnibus is through? I don't know what the actual plan is for, what is it, S-3056? In the Senate, and I forget the House resolution number, but anyway, are we looking at getting these
the bill,
separately? Or?
Yeah, the bill numbers are F-974 in the Senate and H-R-2212 in the House. No, there are no announced plans to take up this bill. There have been these attempts to persuade the leadership to just fold it into the big omnibus appropriations. And that has been rejected. So, unfortunately, the grassroots is going to have to, you know, basically urge Congress, persuade Congress that this is something they want to see happen because it would help lower drug prices, and there should be a vote on it. I don't think they have to worry about failing on that vote, but they just need to get to a vote. And right now, there's no plans to do that.
So that means that we need to get busy contacting our elected representatives as usual. But like you said, this is so widely supported by both sides. I don't see what the big problem would be here. I think they just need maybe a nudge.
I think that's right. I think, you know, as you said, money does talk in Washington. And you know, I worked on Capitol Hill for a number of years in the Republican leadership on the House side. Also a brief stint on the Senate side. And I met with lots of representatives of lots of different organizations and interests. And the big pharma lobby is very influential. Their people are sharp. They figure out what arguments they think will work. They're often on the defensive. They're often trying to stop bills. And it seemed quite obvious to me often that it was simply because they didn't want more competition. But to be fair to them, as you pointed out, they do spend a lot of money and take a lot of risks. And so, you know, and they're serving their shareholders, which is, you know, they should do that. So I'm not trying to make the big pharma boys out to be pure evil or anything. They're following their incentives, which is to try to see if they can't, in effect, keep their monopolies going as long as they can. But I think that's not in the consumer's interest. And I think that if you actually had a floor debate, you would see pretty quickly how weak the arguments are against the bill. And to me, the telling thing is, has the pharmaceutical industry come up with a better idea? I mean, if they don't like this bill, do they have a better bill that they would support instead? So far, the answer, to my knowledge, has been no.
Yeah, I've not seen anything either, so... I would say you're definitely correct with that. Well, Dean, I know we're a little past the bottom of the hour. I don't want to hold you too long. I really appreciate the extra time you gave us. I want everybody to run out there. And first of all, I want you to check out Dean's article on The Hill. And Dean, if you would, just tell everybody where they could find out more about you and find out more about your work so that they know where to go educate themselves.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I posted a copy of that article on my own website, deanclancy.com. And you can also follow me on Twitter at Dean Clancy.
Fantastic, which I have done. So I'll be looking for more information from you as the future of this progresses. Dean, again, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really do appreciate all the good information. Folks, it's time to pick up your phones and contact your elected officials. Dean, again, thank you, and I'm going to let you go, and we're going to cut to a commercial break here because I think Rick might be about to blow a gasket, and we're going to come back and continue the show. But, again, thank you for joining us, Dean. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, but ain't that America? You and me, ain't that America?
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq, Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now, 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
But ain't that America for you and me? Ain't that America something to see, baby? Ain't that America?
All right, welcome back, everybody. Once again, big thank you to Mr. Dean Clancy for joining us tonight. Really appreciate the extra time he gave us to go over the CREATES Act. It folks, $360 billion a year we're spending on pharmaceuticals. I think we could all afford to save a little money. And with the wide support that this CREATES Act has, there's no reason that it shouldn't get passed and get put into play. I also want to take a minute to thank my friend Mo for the big information dump on the front side of this regarding the CREATES Act. Mo, you're the best. All right. So now we're back to show. And what's going on? Well, what's going on is we've got this quote-unquote caravan of people. Looks like from Ecuador or Honduras or something like that, making its way up through Mexico, trying to get to the United States. There's all kinds of discrepancies in the reporting as to what's going on. Trump's threatening Mexico with NAFTA and these other countries with financial aid if they don't stop this. Mexico claims that they're efforting to break the caravan up and tell people that they can have 10 days to get out of Mexico. They didn't tell them which way to go, but allegedly anyway. But that's, you know, you got this big thing going on. And now today, Trump has signed an order that's going to turn the National Guard onto the border to help with ICE and DHS in patrolling the border. So, you know, it looks, I don't know how many troops are going to be activated. Obviously, these are going to be National Guard troops. There are some legalities that come into play in turning our full-time armed services loose on American soil. You know, I don't know all those laws yet, but I'm working to educate myself. So do yourself a favor and stick around, learn more about that. Trump said he's been talking to General Mattis, and they are going to do some things militarily until they can have a wall and proper security, according to President Trump.
We're going to be guarding our border with the military. And he has suggested this before. And he suggested that he could use money allocated for the military to construct the border wall. But again, there is nothing in the omnibus bill that allows for that kind of discretion of funds. So again, we'll have to see what all the legal maneuvering may or may not be. This could all just be bluster. We don't know yet. Ecuadorian refugees. They do this annually, by the way, in case you didn't know. This isn't something new. They do this annually to basically show the hardship of their country. I don't get it. I really don't. I don't know what they were thinking. They can't come in under DACA because the rules, it wouldn't apply to them. They're too late. I don't know. I don't know if they're just thinking, let's get in there and get what we can get. Welfare wise. I don't know. It's, why would you risk your life and your children's lives to move from one slum to another? I mean, I know it can be bad in Ecuador. It can. I am not without sympathy, but we are not the world's problem solvers. We cannot finance every poor person in the world. They're not our responsibility. That doesn't mean you can't feel bad for them. That doesn't mean you can't donate to try to help them. But you know what? They need to try to help themselves. They need to quit crying. They need to take control of their government. Their government needs to be functioning properly. If they don't know how, ask for help. It's unbelievable. Now, Trump was beating Mexico up over this because Mexico was basically not shunning these people. Mexico has some of the strictest immigration laws that you've ever seen in your life. You think ours are strict? You've seen nothing until you examine theirs. You get caught crossing the border illegally into Mexico from the south or the north for that matter. You can expect to spend a minimum of 30 days in jail and an immediate deportation. Okay. Most sentences are much harsher than that and usually start out around a year in jail, fines to be collected, and then deportation. So again, you just think that we're blowing a gasket. No, we're not blowing a gasket. We're blowing money is what we're blowing, and just tons and tons of it. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $118 billion a year that illegal immigrants are claiming via welfare, free food, free schooling, free health care, you name it. We're paying for it. They're not. We are. It needs to stop. Now, Trump is facing pressure from immigration hawks to show that he remains committed to their cause after signing a government spending bill last month that falls well short of the goals he had set for new border wall construction. After failing to reach an agreement with congressional Democrats to extend long-term protections against deportation for young immigrants, Trump has repeatedly accused Democrats of not wanting to make a deal. And I'm starting to see something to it because they've not made a squeak about it. I think they really do want to carry this into the midterms and use it as a bargaining, or not a bargaining chip, but a vote-getting chip. You have to vote for us so we can care for these people, these people that we didn't care for before when we could have made a difference, but now it's the time. So anyway, you know, the Trump administration is crafting legislation to make it harder for refugees to gain asylum in the United States and to extend the periods of time that authorities can hold families and unaccompanied children at the border. Homeland Security Secretary Kristen Nielsen said on Monday that she was working with Mexican officials to address the yearly illegal alien caravan. And she echoed the president's demand for Congress to address outdated and dangerous immigration loopholes, saying that the system is broken. Traffickers and criminal groups know how to exploit the laws, and we need to get smarter and tougher, she said. We're exploring all options to protect the homeland. Who has a problem with this? Who has a problem with the United States remaining a sovereign nation? I mean, find me on Twitter. You know my handle by now. Find me on Twitter. I'm at @TCC_Grouchy. I want to talk to you. If you have a problem with us remaining a sovereign nation, I want to find out what your problem is. So Trump reiterated his complaints about a practice sometimes referred to as catch and release, which allows immigrants found in the U.S. without proper documentation to be released while they wait for a hearing before an immigration judge. In February of 17, then Homeland Security Secretary John Kelly ordered an end to the practice, though some reports suggest it has continued. The president said the current legal system for handling refugees who entered the country illegally was ridiculous, and we have to change our policies fast. With him on this, I agree. It is absolutely ludicrous. These people, these catch and release policies, you're netting less than 10% of them coming back for their trial date. Less than 10%. That's from the U.S. government that's making this policy. Come on. It's not hard to figure out who's getting played here. So, anyway, let's backtrack a little bit, and let's get back towards Washington, D.C., if you will. A four-page letter addressed to three Republican committee chairmen, Chuck Grassley, Bob Goodlatte, and Trey Gowdy, from Attorney General Jeff Sessions. He said he takes their concerns about alleged FISA abuse seriously, but he will not be the one to decide if a special counsel is warranted. I'm wondering, what is Attorney General Sessions doing? This has absolutely nothing to do with what he recused himself from. This is about FISA abuse, plain and simple. I guess you could make a 6 degrees connection back to the Russia investigation if you really tried. But, you know, he should have just done this. He's taking a path of straddling a fence is what he's doing, and he's going to leave the decision to somebody else. He said he has asked a senior federal prosecutor, United States Attorney John Huber of Utah, originally an Obama appointee, to decide whether the Republicans' concerns about the FBI's conduct merit the appointment of a special counsel. Why wouldn't you go for somebody else? I'm not going to sit here and besmirch the name U.S. Attorney John Huber. I don't know him. I don't know anything about his case history. But this is a man that Obama thought enough of to put on the court. So, Mr. Huber is conducting his work from outside the Washington, D.C. area and in cooperation with the Inspector General, Sessions wrote. I receive regular updates from Mr. Huber, and upon the conclusion of his review, I will receive his recommendations as to whether any matters not currently under investigation should be opened. why wouldn't you want somebody else, maybe a Bush appointee, maybe somebody that's even been around longer than that? Why wouldn't you want somebody more conservative to do this? I'm not saying that their politics should play a role in this, but the history of Obama appointees' politics playing roles in any and everything is clear. It's ridiculous. Now, Sessions noted that he already asked the Justice Department's Inspector General to review the Republicans' concerns about the FBI's application to a FISA court for a warrant to spy on Carter Page, an unpaid foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign. Sessions famously recused himself from the FBI's investigation into the alleged Trump-Russia coordination that we know now never existed. He left that to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein to appoint a special counsel in that case. This special counsel has taken shape, and it looks like it couldn't be a bigger Obama-Hillary rah-rah team if you tried to appoint one. In his letter on Thursday, Sessions noted that under DOJ regulations, the appointment of a special counsel by design is reserved for use only in the most extraordinary circumstances. Then why did we appoint one to begin with? Because there were no extraordinary circumstances to compel a special counsel to start with in the first place. Sessions wrote that to justify such an appointment, the attorney general would need to conclude that the public interest would be served by removing a large degree of responsibility for the matter from the Department of Justice. And that's exactly what Republicans have argued, that the Justice Department cannot investigate itself, and therefore a special counsel is needed to examine whether the FISA process used by the FBI in the fall of 2016 was appropriate and devoid of extraneous influence. In their March 6th letter to Attorney General Sessions requesting the appointment of a special counsel, House Oversight and Government Reform Committee Chair Gowdy and House Judiciary Chair Goodlatte wrote, "We believe that in the case of certain decisions made and not made by the Department of Justice and the FBI in 2016 and 2017, both an actual conflict of interest exists and the public interest requires the appointment of a special counsel." They also collaborated to write, "This evidence of bias trending toward animus among those charged with investigating serious cases, there's evidence political opposition research was used in court filings. There's evidence that political opposition research was neither vetted before it was used or fully revealed to the relevant tribunal. Questions have arisen with the FISA process, and these questions and concerns threaten to impugn both public and congressional confidence in significant counterintelligence program processes and those charged with overseeing and implementing these counterintelligence processes." Pretty strong language. You know, these are the people that provide the oversight for DOJ. Oversight, not undersight, oversight. So if the people that provide oversight think there needs to be a special counsel, why would there be any hesitation? Anyway. So, let's real quick before we have to wrap up here in just a few minutes. I want to hit one more story: a regulatory win for the Trump administration. The EPA announced Monday that it is revising the emission standards of cars and light trucks that was put in place by the Obama administration, saying that the Obama administration cut the process short with politically charged expediency. The EPA is announcing the completion of the midterm evaluation process for the greenhouse gas emission standards for cars and light truck for model years 2022 through 2025, and his final determination that in light of recent data, the current standards are not appropriate and should be revised. So Administrator Pruitt is also announcing the start of a joint process with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to develop a notice and comment rulemaking to set more appropriate GHG emission standards and corporate average fuel economy standards. The Obama administration's determination was wrong, Pruitt said. Obama's EPA cut the midterm evaluation process short with politically charged expediency, made assumptions about the standards that didn't comport with reality, and set the standards too high to satisfy a political base. Strong comments. The EPA is also re-examining the waiver that California was granted by the Obama administration to set stricter standards for emissions on certain pollutants that the federal government requires. Cooperative federalism doesn't mean that one state can dictate standards for the rest of the country, Pruitt said. The EPA will set a national standard for greenhouse gas emissions that allows auto manufacturers to make cars that people both want and can afford, while still expanding environmental and safety benefits of newer cars. He says it's in America's best interest to have a national standard, and we look forward to partnering with all states, including California, as we work to finalize that standard. A National Automobile Dealers Association applauded the EPA's decision, saying that they had long supported a data-driven and informed process for determining future greenhouse gas and fuel economy standards, and we applaud the EPA for putting us back on this path. America's franchised auto dealers fully support continuous improvements in fuel economy and vehicle emissions, and we fully support fuel economy requirements that will allow us to build on the progress we've already achieved while keeping new vehicles affordable for working men and women all across America. Standards alone, whatever they are, won't do the trick, but smart standards that maintain affordability and encourage fleet turnover will help maximize the number of cleaner, safer, more fuel-efficient vehicles we get on the road every year. So once again, another regulatory win for the Trump administration. I haven't seen anything yet about anybody suing to stop this, but I'm sure that it's going to happen. And of course, you know, they're going to take it to the ninth, because the ninth will offer an injunction against anything that has the president's administration sign off. And that's where we are. Folks, we're back around to the top of the hour. It's time to get ready to get it out of here. Again, I want to thank our guest tonight, Dean Clancy, for coming on and discussing the CREATES Act with us. Serious good information. You need to find him and find the link to his article. It's very educational, and it's important that you contact your elected officials to get them pushing hard on this CREATES Act. And let's start saving us all some money, huh? Jesse's POV is coming up next. Later on tonight, after that, well, not after Jesse's POV, but 2 hours after Jesse's POV, Rowdy Rick with America Off the Rails. It's been great being here with you, folks. If you like the show, tell your friends. If your friends like the show, you need new ones, but they and you are welcome every week right here with me on KLRN Radio. I'm the Grouch. Peace and God bless. God.